Good evening. Please welcome Shackley's Vice President of Health Science and Education, Mr. Les Wong. You may begin.
Hi, Shackley family. Welcome to another Wednesday night Health Sciences conference call. We're in beautiful downtown Pleasanton, where the weather is 90-something degrees here, just in time for our favorite golf tournament, the CVS Long's LPGA Challenge, but we'll get to that in a minute. The topics for our conference calls tonight are very special and very near and dear to me. I want to introduce our team here. We have Pam Manning, we've got Torrance Rogers, and we've got Nell Prentice. Our fearless compadre, Dr. McManus, is out on the road, so we'll be taking over on this call. We're talking about two very important topics tonight, dietary fiber and vitamin D. You hear a lot about these in the news, in the media, and there's good reason. There's really good science supporting the benefits of having more of these in the diet. We know also from surveys, dietary surveys, that we simply don't get enough of these, so it's so important for us to make sure that we're getting enough of these in the diet. And so we will get to those momentarily. There's a couple of announcements I do want to make. Number one, we are doing our Dream Tour events. There's a few that are coming up very shortly. The first one that comes up is on October 19th. That's right here in Pleasanton, California at the home office. And anyone who attends is going to be lucky to hear Pam Riggs talk at that event about science and products and Shackley. So come to that event, anyone who's local here in California. The next events will happen on the weekend of the October 22nd. And they are Friday night Dream Tour events. There are three of them that are going on at the same time around the country. Here on the West Coast, we have Pam Manning in San Diego. On the in the mountain area, we've got Alexia Smith, Dr. Alexia Smith, who I believe is in Denver. And then I will be in D.C. on, again, Friday night, October 22nd, as part of the Dream Tour again. For those of you who didn't hear, again, it's Pam it's Pam Riggs in Pleasanton on the 19th. It's Pam again that weekend in San Diego on the 22nd. Alexia Smith in Denver. And then I'll be in D.C. also on the 22nd. I do also want to mention the when you've got nutrition and science and product questions, you want to go ahead and make sure you're calling our product support line. That's 925-734-3638. Torrance Rogers handles his colleagues sort of in that area and works with them and supports them to get you the answers you need on our nutritional products and the science. That line is open again, 925-734-3638. Those lines are open from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific time. So make sure you get your calls in there. You can get your answers to products very, very quick. And Jody, do we have Sandra? Okay, so tonight's topics again, we're going to be talking about vitamin D and fiber. One of the reasons we want to talk about the science in these ingredients and these nutrients is that we just introduced a couple of fantastic products in our Anaheim convention in August, and we want to give you the science that supports the why, the how much, the when, and how these nutrients can help support you in your quest for optimal health. So we're really pleased to be able to bring you some of that science tonight. But first, we're trying to do, and I apologize for the delay here, we're trying to do a live interview with a professional golfer who's one of our Shackley athletes who's been using Shackley for a number of years now. She's a very special athlete that I've had the chance to meet a few times. She really shares the Shackley philosophy. She's committed to fitness, nutrition, and she asks how products affect her health and impact her health and that of her family. And to me, that shows wisdom beyond her young years. She's also a tremendous athletic talent, very committed to golf, very committed to fitness, works with one of the best in the business in terms of fitness training, and that is Mr. Kai Fusser. Some of you will know him. He works at the He works in Florida at the Annika Academy and other with many, many professional athletes. We are very fortunate to be a colleague of his, and she's having some great success, I think in part because of her work with Kai and, again, her commitment to fitness and nutrition. So, Sandra, are you with us now? Sandra? All right, just a little bit of background on Sandra Golf. She is born in Germany. She played golf. She played tennis, raised by a very fit father and family. She moved on to wakeboarding. In addition to being a fantastic athlete, she's also an artist. She's quite the bit of a painter. She moved over into the States to attend the University of Florida. Starred on their golf team at that point, went ahead and got her LPGA, Ladies Professional Golf Tour, Golf Association, got her tour card in 2008, had basically her first full year on tour last year in which she was a top 50 golfer, and this is her second full year, and again, being supported and helped along with good nutrition, in part provided by Shaklee. So, Sandra, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi,
yay!
Sandra. Thanks so much for hanging in there and joining us. We're so glad to have you with us. Just like to ask you a couple of questions. We know you're on, you know, out basically on the course and practicing for the tournament that starts tomorrow. Tell us about your you know, what golf means to you.
Oh, golf is basically my life. I just really love it. You know, it's just a simple thing of just hitting a great iron shot or, you know, hitting a great long drive or rolling a nice putt in that really gets me going. So that and just being outside, connecting with nature, I mean, you know, it's all I can ask for.
I think those are good things. Now, tell us how fitness and nutrition are important to your aspirations.
Okay, well, I've always kind of been brought up having a conscious, healthy lifestyle. And, you know, I just like things that are organic and pure and, you know, just feel, make me feel energized and just feel good about myself, you know.
And why, then, is Shaklee a good fit for you?
Oh, Shaklee, I just love their philosophy. And I love how all their products are natural and green and really effective.
Well, that's great. And can you tell us what a few of your favorite products are?
Oh, yeah, that's easy. I really like the Cinch, the vanilla Cinch shake that I usually use after 9 holes just to kind of give me more energy after at the turn. And the other one is a new product. It's the Chewy Apple Cinnamon Bars. And same thing, you know, I eat them on the course just as a snack, and they taste good, and they, you know, give me energy, keep me going.
That's great. And we talked earlier, I should let people know that we talked earlier, you're actually at this CBS Longs tournament, which takes place here in the East Bay, which is only 10, 15 miles north of Pleasanton here in the home office. And I want to mention that you talked about you need more Shaklee performance, so we're going to find a way to get that to you on the course in the next day or so. Any other products that stand out for you?
Oh, there's several, you know. I've been recently using a lot of the energizing soy protein, especially when I work out a lot. I just, you know, take a little bit before and after, so I can just rebuild my muscle and get some protein in.
Excellent. Hey, tell us about, just really quickly, about the CVS tournament here in California.
Yeah.
What do you like about this tournament? What's special about this one? In addition to us being, you know,
being close. Yeah. Well, first of all, it's in California. I love California. It's just a really nice setting here. You know, it's actually quite a challenging course, and it's a little bit funky, so it's kind of different than the other ones that we play every week. You know, it's very, very hilly. So you have a lot of different elevations you're hitting to. You know, I just love coming here.
And you get a good crowd. You get good support out there.
We do. I hope you guys come out.
I'm going to try to get my young daughters out there to support you this weekend. All right. And in terms of your golf, your career, what do you want? What are your aspirations? What would you like to achieve?
I want to be number one in the world. And I just want to have a blast getting there, you know. So I just really want to enjoy the journey and just get the best out of me that I can.
Great. And the last question I have for you, and we'll let you get back to your practice, and that is, mm-hmm. what would you like the audience to know about you? They're getting 5 minutes of Sandra Gall. What would you like them to know, one thing you'd like them to think or know about you?
I think that they should know that, you know, I'm a golfer, and that's kind of my dream and my life, but one day... I'm not going to want to do this forever, and one day I just want to give back again to the community where I came from, or, you know, something to do with children. So that's like another passion that I want to do one day.
Well, your kind of thinking and philosophy and giving back and thinking about health and nutrition and fitness, mm-hmm. They all sort of remind us of why we're well aligned with you and thankful that you're one of our athletes on board. So, again, thank you very much for taking the time to share with us.
Guys.
Have a great tournament. Get out there and practice a little bit more, and good luck this weekend.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks so much, Sandra.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks.
Okay, so that was a little bit of a detour, but it was a special opportunity we had to speak to one of our sponsored golfers. We thought we should take advantage of it. Now let's sort of get to the science and the core of the call, one of the two topics, and that is one that Shackley has been involved with for many, many years, and Pamela Riggs is going to tell you more about dietary fiber and why it's so important.
Thanks, Les, and it's my pleasure to be here tonight with all of you. And just to clarify, the name is now Pam Riggs, and my cohort here has used Manning Riggs, but I did get married in July, and we're also getting used to the name change, so I will answer to both, and you can find me both ways, but I just had to laugh at the switching back of the name. So I'm here tonight to talk to you about dietary fiber, and I think it's great because Sandra just talked about one of her, you know, favorite products being kind of our new chewy apple cinnamon fiber bar. So that's perfect for me to lead into the science behind fiber, why it's important, some of the various health benefits associated with getting adequate dietary fiber. And it's one of those subjects that I think most people, I don't know, may not get too excited about because they think we know fiber is important. But I'm hoping tonight that I can inspire people to do their best to get more fiber and do it through a healthy diet and obviously augment your diet with some great fiber products from Shackley. So let's just start from the beginning because I think it's important to clarify, you know, what dietary fiber is. And what fiber is, it's really the portion of plant foods that aren't broken down by your digestive system. And as a result, that fiber reaches the large intestines where it can be excreted as waste and metabolized by the bacteria that you have residing in large intestines. There are different types of fibers. Different types of plants have varying amounts of fibers, most of the fiber that we get in our diet comes from, you know, fruits and vegetables and whole grains, seeds, and beans. In general, there are two basic types of fiber. We can classify them into insoluble fibers and soluble fibers. And the reason for that really is their ability to kind of dissolve in water. So soluble fibers dissolve in water, they form a gel and have certain functions associated with that. And insoluble fibers don't dissolve well, and so they kind of form the bulk and help move things through the digestive system. So the soluble fibers typically are fibers that are found in kind of fruits, oat, barley, beans, and these types of fibers, when you consume them, form a gel kind of help retain water, and they slow the rate at which food leaves the stomach. They promote satiety. They promote healthy blood sugar levels. Some fibers like psyllium husk fibers, barley, and oat beta-glucan can promote heart health by helping to lower cholesterol, by binding to cholesterol in the foods that you're consuming it with and helping to excrete that cholesterol in waste. There are types of soluble fibers that are also known as prebiotic fibers, And what prebiotic fibers are they are fibers that specifically get metabolized by health-promoting bacteria that are in your large intestines, like bifidobacteria and lactobacillus bacteria. So they selectively kind of feed and fuel the growth of these health-promoting bacteria in the large intestines. Then we have insoluble fibers, and those are the fibers that are found kind of in whole grains and vegetables, and they help more with intestinal function. They absorb water, they swell in the intestines, promoting, you know, movement through the of waste through the intestines, and increase, you know, the transit time of the foods that you have in your system. There's also differences between soluble and insoluble fibers to the degree in which they get fermented by the bacteria that are in your large intestines. Soluble fibers tend to be fermentable, meaning that the bacteria there feed on the fibers, they can digest them, they produce fatty acids that can actually be health-promoting to your colon, and then insoluble fibers are not as fermentable. It's also the soluble fermentable fibers that can also produce intestinal gas, and that's often a problem with people when they start to boost their fiber intake is they get kind of gas and bloating, and that's because the bacteria, when they're breaking down the fibers, are producing the short-chain fatty acids and the gases as a byproduct of their metabolism. There are also kind of unique insoluble fibers, like resistant starch, and that's an interesting insoluble fiber because resistant starch is naturally found in whole grains, seeds, legumes, and underripe fruit like green bananas. It's also prevalent when you have cooked starches like pasta salad or potato salad or sushi rice. And the unique thing about this type of insoluble fiber is that it's actually slowly fermented by bacteria, so it can be fermented and has some prebiotic properties to it, as well as it's produces, as part of that metabolism from the bacteria, produces short-chain fatty acids that are good for your colon cells, that it can actually be protective against abnormal cell growth in the colon and have some, you know, cancer, anti-cancer activity. So really interesting that these different fibers have these different functions. So that's kind of the background on dietary fiber, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, how much fiber we're all getting, because as much as, you know, I'm a dietitian, as much as I try to eat my fruits and vegetables and get my whole grains, you know, it's hard to do that consistently, and the current, you know, recommendations for fiber put out by the Institute of Medicine and the dietary reference intakes are about 14 grams of fiber per 1,000 calories consumed. So that works out to anywhere between about 25 grams of fiber for, let's say, an adult woman, up to even 38 grams of fiber for adult men. So the typical recommendations you'll see are to try to achieve a diet that's about 25 to 35 grams of fiber a day. Most of us, the majority of us, do not get that much. And you're lucky if you get even, you know, 15 grams of fiber a day from our diets. So here we are, you know, needing to get 25 to 35 grams of fiber a day, and a lot of different public health organizations, such as the American Dietetic Association, the American Heart Association, even the latest dietary guidelines for Americans, are all pushing us to get more fruits and vegetables, fiber-rich fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and really trying to achieve closer to that at least 25 grams of fiber a day. But when you look at national nutrition surveys, we're only getting about 15, and that's, you know, all ages, from children to middle-aged adults to the elderly. We're just not reaching that goal of that 25 grams of fiber. And the primary reason is, you know, our lifestyles, our eating habits, we're busy. People tend to, you know, choose highly processed and fast foods that are voided of, you know, fiber versus the fruits and vegetables and other fiber-rich foods. You know, 15% of adults and 8% of our youth are not even, you know, barely getting the 2 servings of fruits a day, 3 servings of vegetables a day that we recommend at a minimum. and less than 10% of us are getting the recommended number of servings of whole grains. So we're really not getting the fiber that we need every day. As I said, this affects everybody in your family, from, you know, your preschool children who aren't getting enough fiber to, you know, and grandparent that might be living in the house. So where do we get fiber? As I said, the majority of fiber that we get in our diet does come from whole grains, vegetables, legumes, nuts, soy, fruits. Beans in particular and legumes are one of the most excellent sources of fiber. You can get anywhere between 6 to 9 grams of fiber for a half a cup of cooked beans. Whole grains like whole wheat bread, brown rice, you know, are going to range between 1 to 5 grams of serving fiber per serving. And you can get, you know, if you're doing the bran cereals, you may even be getting 9 grams per serving. Fruits and vegetables will vary in their fiber content, and the more processed things are. So if you're going to have apple juice versus, you know, an apple, the apple juice is going to have very little fiber versus the whole fruit that's going to give you a couple grams of fiber. So the important thing is to try to, you know, boost our dietary intake with fruits, vegetables, you know, beans as much as we can to reach those fiber recommendations. So what if we're not getting enough fiber? What are the health consequences associated with low-fiber diets? Well, I'm going to focus primarily on a couple digestive-related conditions, but, you know, low-fiber diets have also been linked to, you know, higher blood cholesterol, increased blood sugar, obesity, and so there's some other factors in there that I'll talk about. But I want to first focus on a condition that really, you know, is pretty prevalent. More than 4 million Americans suffer from constipation. It accounts for over 2.5 million visits to the doctor every year. And, you know, almost everyone, at least sometime in their life, experience constipation. And some people suffer from it on a chronic basis. Now, poor diet, not enough dietary fiber, is a cause. It's one of the causes, but other things such as lack of physical activity, certain medications, changes in life, you know, pregnancy can, the changes in hormones during pregnancy can result in constipation. As we age, things slow down. Anytime you travel, if you're, you know, abusing laxatives, if you're dehydrated, and any other, you know, particular disease and conditions that you might have that could lead to constipation. So it is a problem, and low-fiber diets are definitely associated with increased prevalence of, you know, an experience of constipation. Another consequence of a low-fiber diet is something called diverticular disease, and I've never had it, thank God, and nobody in my family has, but at my years as working with a clinical dietitian, I will always remember, you know, people coming in to the hospital suffering from acute diverticulitis and being in extreme pain and discomfort. So I know it's a very miserable condition when you have an acute flare-up. But the disease is kind of broken up to two kind of phases. Diverticulosis, that osis means is a kind of a chronic condition, and that's where in the large intestine someone has developed these pouches. They're kind of these out pouches in the intestinal wall called diverticula. Some of the recent statistics suggest that, you know, 10% of Americans, you know, older than age 40 have diverticulosis. It increases with age. More than, you know, half of all people older than 60 are believed to have some form of diverticulosis. Now, when it's in this chronic stage, it can be symptom-free, and you may not be even aware that you have it until a complication develops, and the complication is diverticulitis, that is an infection of these pouches, and that's where you get the pain and discomfort associated with this condition. This condition is rare in countries like Asia and Africa where they eat, you know, a very high fiber diet. And we know that, you know, the lower the fiber in your diet, that requires the muscles in your intestines to, you know, work a lot harder to move waste products through the intestines. That increases pressure in the colon, and that's this increased pressure, which is what causes these diverticula, the pouches, to develop in the first place. Another condition that is concerning, obviously, and associated with low-fiber diets is the prevalence of colorectal cancer. That affects, you know, both men and women of all racial and ethnic groups. Is more commonly found in people, you know, over the age of 50 or older. And, you know, of cancers that affect both men and women, colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer killer in the United States. So it's a serious type of cancer. And the good thing is that, you know, higher fiber diets can be protective against that. You know, there's a lot of different factors related to the risk of colorectal cancer, age, you know, genetics, your diet, as well as the presence of inflammatory bowel disease. But lifestyle factors, diet low in fiber, low in fruit and vegetable intakes, high in fat, a lack of physical activity, if you're overweight or obese, if you drink too much alcohol, those all increase your risk of colorectal cancer. So, time to get more fiber. Obviously, by boosting your fiber intake, you're going to be doing something very good for your health. We know that there are numerous benefits associated with a high-fiber diet, reducing the risk of heart disease, colon cancer, diabetes, and promoting a healthy digestive system. And as I said, you know, fiber plays a role in normal laxation. So if you're going to, you know, if you get more fiber in your diet, that's going to increase the stool weight. It's going to promote movement of waste through the digestive system, increase that more rapidly, and therefore you're going to prevent constipation and other diseases of the large intestines. Prevention of diverticular disease. We know that a high-fiber diet can be protective against the development of diverticular disease. The bulking action of fiber is going to prevent that. You know, you're not going to need as much force to contract the intestinal waste, so you're going to reduce the likelihood of developing those pockets that form in the mucosal layer of the colon. The last thing you want to do is get an infection in these pockets to cause acute diverticulitis. So a high-fiber diet is, to this day, you know, an acceptable treatment for the prevention of diverticular disease, as well as if you have diverticular disease, preventing formation of more pockets and preventing the pockets from getting infected. The other thing I want to mention about getting more fiber is really promoting intestinal microflora balance. We know that you have trillions of bacteria in your colon. Some are good, some are bad, some are ugly, and they all balance each other out. So if you can feed yourself more soluble prebiotic fibers like inulin, oligosaccharides, the resistant starch, you can, you know, promote the growth of friendly bacteria in the digestive tract so that you get that healthy balance of microflora. You know, there are lots of studies showing that that could promote overall health and wellness. The last two things I just want to mention again is that high-fiber diets can also be helpful against you know, colon cancer development, not only just from, you know, promoting regularity, but these fermentable fibers can actually produce these short-chain fatty acids when they're metabolized by bacteria in the colon. And there's been some interesting studies with butyrate, which is one of the short-chain fatty acids that's produced from fiber metabolism, suggesting that by doing, you know, these short-chain fatty acids, they kind of lower the pH of the colon. They create an environment that prevents the growth of harmful bacteria. They also aid in the absorption of minerals like calcium and magnesium from the large intestines and can appear to prevent uncontrolled abnormal cell growth, which is an early sign of colorectal cancer. So some interesting research on prebiotic fibers and protection against, you know, colon cancer. And just lastly, I'd like to just put a plug in for high-fiber diets for weight management. I think, you know, we're all dealing with either managing our weight or trying to lose weight, and high-fiber diets can really be helpful for a number of reasons. We know that high-fiber diets generally require more chewing time, so it gives your body some time to send a message to your brain that it's satisfied, and you can kind of control hunger that way. High-fiber foods tend to linger longer in your stomach, so they can sustain the feelings of fullness for a longer period of time. High-fiber foods tend to also be less energy-dense, meaning they don't have, you know, as many calories for the same volume of food as something that would be lower in fiber and higher in fat. And then finally, some researchers even believe that fiber has the ability to reduce insulin secretion. And insulin is important for moving glucose into the blood into the cells of your body to metabolize that carbohydrate. But it also affects fat storage. So if you can kind of reduce insulin secretion, then you're less likely to promote more fat storage, which can be an important role in preventing weight gain. And there's actually been some interesting studies. One in at Children's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, where researchers looked at the diets of over almost 3,000 individuals between the age of 18 and 30, and they found that the individuals who ate at least 21 grams of fiber per day gained on average 8 pounds less over 10 years than those who ate the least amount of fiber. And there's another study, the Nurses' Health Study through the Harvard School of Public Health, that looked at, you know, over 74,000 nurses and their whole grain intake, and they found that women with the greatest whole grain consumption weighed less and were less likely to gain weight and become obese. So if you're like most Americans struggling to achieve a healthy weight, while you're cutting your calories and exercising more, don't forget to boost your fiber intake. So that's my little talk on fiber tonight, and I'm going to pass it back to Les to tell you about vitamin D.
Very informative, Pam. Thanks so much for that kind of update on fiber science. I am going to talk about vitamin D, very near and dear to me for the last couple of years because of some of the scientific research we've conducted. But I just have something online right now, and we know the whole world is watching this as it unfolds before us, and that is the rescue of the Chilean miners, the 33. Last I heard, there were probably about 19 who had sort of made it to the surface. One of the interesting things is that NASA has been involved in supporting them, and one of the interesting things that NASA suggested was a supplement of vitamin D to help make up for the lack of sun that they're getting, and because of all the important things that we know are related to vitamin D intake and sufficient levels of vitamin D. Well, what is vitamin D and why is it so important? Let me go into that a bit. We all know that vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin, and it's essential for promoting calcium absorption and maintaining serum calcium and phosphate concentrations. And what this does is it supports proper bone mineralization for proper bone density. So it's needed for bone growth and what we call remodeling, as insufficient vitamin D can lead to thin or brittle bones. Vitamin D3, also known as cholecalciferol, which is the natural form found in humans, is synthesized by humans in the skin upon exposure to sunlight, or it can be obtained from the diet. But I'll tell you later, that's a bit difficult. When exposure to sunlight or UVB radiation is inadequate, supplemental dietary intake of D is essential for a supporting optimal health. So vitamin D sufficiency also prevents rickets, a bone disease in children, osteomalacia, osteoporosis in adults, along with calcium. Other functions in human health include modulation of neuromuscular and immune function and reduction of inflammation. More recent research has suggested important roles for vitamin D in supporting heart health, and not only that, but modulating cell growth and proliferation and reducing tumor growth. Low vitamin D status has been shown to raise the risk of heart disease independently of established risk factors. Vitamin D's role in many of these cardiovascular functions is becoming clear, and it's now thought to potentially influence blood pressure, parathyroid hormone levels, heart function, inflammation, and vascular calcification or hardening of the arteries. Also, vitamin D's role as a molecular modulator of the immune system has gained a lot of attention and a lot of awareness in recent years. It's known to have immunomodulatory effects on a wide range of immune cells, including T cells, B cells, and dendritic cells. Vitamin D deficiency is a significant risk factor for development of a number of autoimmune diseases, including MS, or multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes, and SLE, or systemic lupus erythematosus. There's a growing amount of research in one area, and that is then evidence that vitamin D supports colon health and that low vitamin D status is a pretty significant risk factor for colorectal cancers. A high blood level of vitamin D has been shown to reduce the risk of colorectal cancer, and it appears to suppress colorectal cancer development and growth by affecting, at the cellular level, cell proliferation and differentiation and apoptosis. Vitamin D is naturally present in fish like salmon, tuna, and mackerel, and fish liver oils like cod liver oil that some of us used to take when we were younger. But fortified foods like cow's milk and orange juice and breakfast cereals and, of course, dietary supplements provide most of the vitamin D in the American diet outside of the internal synthesis from sun exposure. But the normal intake of vitamin D from the diet is generally fairly low. You get about 120 international units from a glass of milk, so you'd need basically 3 to 4 glasses of milk to get your daily requirement, and I don't think too many of us are consuming that high a level of dairy products these days. Well, in terms of nutritional requirements, where do we stand? Well, the Institute of Medicine recommended intakes for vitamin D are 200 IUs for young adults, 400 IUs for those age 51 to 70, and 600 IUs for those 70 and up. The basic DRI or DV is 400 IUs for adults. Recently, the American Academy of Pediatrics began or increased their recommendation for infants and children up to 400 international units. They actually doubled it from 200, and they're based on guidelines from based on evidence from new clinical trials and the historical precedence of safely giving 400 IUs per day in the pediatric and adolescent population. So we applaud the increase in the vitamin D recommended intakes, but we join many other scientists who would choose to and recommend to increase the vitamin D intake levels to even greater levels based on recent years of research. In fact, many researchers believe that significant health improvements correlate with mean blood vitamin D concentrations, which are measured as 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations above 75 nanomoles per liter, or the equivalent, which is 30 nanograms per ml. And this could be achieved with only vitamin D intakes well above the current recommendations. 2 years ago, an Institute of Medicine committee was named to assess the current relevant data and update the dietary reference intakes for vitamin D and calcium. And this review has been, as we expected, has been delayed. It is now targeted to be released before the end of 2010, but it's possible that the report could be delayed further, and it's possible that the increased levels that are expected won't be as high as many scientists think the recommendations still need to be. What we do know is that these results clearly will be controversial. They will have proponents for higher and lower levels when they are released. I mentioned 25-hydroxy vitamin D. It's the best assessment of vitamin D status. Recent research has found that higher levels of 25-hydroxy vitamin D are associated with optimal bone mineral density, reduced risk of bone fracture, improved lower extremity function, and dental health as well. So reduction in the fracture incidence occurs when mean serum 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations exceed about 72 nanomoles per liter, and that's about the equivalent of 30 nanograms per ml, which is about the level which is considered sufficient by a group of lead scientists today in the vitamin D sort of research world. So when we talk about vitamin D sufficiency, we're talking about a 25-hydroxy vitamin D level above 30 nanograms per ml or above 75 nanomoles per liter. Let's talk about vitamin D deficiency a little bit. Generally, younger people have higher serum 25-hydroxy level vitamin D levels than older people. This was from an NHANES study. Males had higher levels than females, and non-Hispanic whites had higher levels than Mexican Americans, who in turn had higher levels than non-Hispanic blacks. When you looked at the different population, different populations within the American populace, the majority, somewhere between 50 and up to 80%, have levels that are in the insufficient range for vitamin D. Let's talk about deficiencies again. A recent study found that 25-hydroxy vitamin D in 600 adolescents between the ages of 14 to 18 were insufficient. Vitamin D insufficiency was found in 56.4% of subjects, and that black subjects were at significantly higher risk with a 94% level of insufficiency, and 83% of them were deficient. In a study of over 3,000 women ages 50 to 70 participating in the Women's Health Initiative study, only 13% had vitamin D sufficiency with levels of 25-hydroxy vitamin D greater than 75 nanomoles per liter. What that study did show is that serum levels increased with increasing sun exposure, total time spent walking, oral intake of vitamin D, education, and physical activity. So let me briefly move to the studies that Shackley is proud to have participated in vitamin D nutrition. First of all, our landmark study published in late 2007 showed that long-term users of Shackley supplements had an average intake of about 1,000 international units of supplemental vitamin D, and that our 25-hydroxy vitamin D levels in the summertime averaged at well over 100 nanomoles per liter, the equivalent of about 50-51 nanograms per ml, which is well above the target or the minimum level for sufficiency at 30. Shackley's second vitamin D study, which was published last year in the Journal of Clinical Lipidology, showed that higher supplemental intakes of vitamin D were associated with significant improvements in 25-hydroxy vitamin D status, as well as increased levels of HDL cholesterol, which then significantly lowered heart disease risk. Our third vitamin D study is one that we just presented this year at the May meeting of the annual scientific sessions of the clinical lipidologist group, and that study showed that administration of 1,200 international units of vitamin D from Shackley supplements for 2 months was successful in raising non-Shackley supplement users with vitamin D insufficiency, and 2 months of supplementation with 1,200 international units of D from Shackley supplements got these people to sufficiency, which was moving the needle clearly in the direction we wanted to do. Now, the study also confirmed that there are many other key determinants of vitamin D status that need to be addressed, and the findings from this study are being used to update supplement recommendations designed to help optimize blood vitamin D levels in those at-risk non-Shackley, non-supplement user populations who have high risk for low vitamin D intakes. And who are those people that are at risk for vitamin D inadequacy or insufficiency? Well, there's a bunch of groups. There's breastfed infants, because vitamin D requirements really can't be met by human milk alone. Older adults, as we age, we don't synthesize vitamin D as efficiently, and the kidney is less able to convert vitamin D to its active form. In fact, institutionalized seniors are at very, very high risk for vitamin D deficiency. Homebound individuals, those living in northern latitudes, people who wear long robes and hair and head coverings, people with occupations that prevent sun exposure, these are populations with limited sun exposure who may be failing to obtain adequate vitamin D from sunlight. Those with darker skin. Darker skin reduces the ability to produce vitamin D from exposure to sunlight. Those who are obese or overweight, and people with a BMI greater than 30 have typically been shown to have low plasma concentrations of 25-hydroxy of vitamin D, and this level increases as obesity and body fat increases as well. People who don't exercise regularly. Recent study found positive associations between 25-hydroxy vitamin D levels in adolescents, vigorous physical activity, and maximal oxygen uptake. The last group is those who don't eat vitamin D-rich foods, which is most of us, because this includes, again, fish liver oils, or some fortified foods. Well, in terms of the benefits of increasing vitamin D dietary supplement intakes, I want to talk about a little bit supplementation levels. Although the current recommendations call for between 200 and 600 IUs of vitamin D, again, many scientists and many organizations recommend increasing intake beyond this level recommended by the IOM. For example, the National Osteoporosis Foundation recommends between 400 and 1,000 units for adults. The Linus Pauling Institute at Oregon State University recommends that generally healthy adults take 2,000 IUs per day. Dr. Andrew Weil of the Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine raised his recommendation for vitamin D from 1,000 to 2,000 international units earlier this year. And the Vitamin D Council, a nonprofit organization of scientists and concerned citizens, recommends an intake of 5,000 IUs per day for healthy adults and adolescents. In a review of the literature on high-dose intakes, there was a 2009 review of the benefits of higher-dose vitamin D supplementation, and the authors concluded that oral doses in the range of 1,800 to 4,000 international units can provide optimal benefits without adverse effects. Another study that is not yet published, this was work done by Bruce Hollis, one of the leaders in vitamin D research. He showed that vitamin D was strongly associated with a decreased risk of preterm labor, preterm birth, and infection during pregnancy, with the greatest effects seen with 4,000 international units of vitamin D given daily to pregnant women, and they recommend 4,000 international units per day for all pregnant women. A study done by Aloya looked at a mean dose of 3,440 international units of vitamin D to achieve and maintain desired vitamin D levels, and when that number was projected out onto a dose response curve for the population of the national population, it yielded a dose estimate of 3,800 international units for those with adequate or higher vitamin D levels, and 5,000 international units for those below 5,000 vitamin D. With regards to safety and toxicity, we believe that although the current upper limit established by the Institute of Medicine is currently at 2,000 international units, there have been a couple reviews in recent years by highly esteemed scientists in vitamin D science, and they both concluded that the true upper limit for vitamin D should be in the range of 10,000 IUs, which is well above the 2,000 IU intake recommended by Linus Pauling, and 5,000 recommended by others as well. So we don't feel that our intakes or our recommendations would lead to any adverse events or concerns for those looking to increase their intake. In terms of our new Shaklee vitamin D recommendations, again, although the current vitamin D intakes, the new research confirms the need for additional vitamin D supplementation in at-risk populations, especially during the winter months. There are many factors that impact vitamin D intakes and risk for low vitamin D levels. skin color and seasons are probably two of the best predictors of supplemental vitamin D need. Dark-skinned individuals are particularly susceptible to vitamin D insufficiency, as I mentioned, because darker skin color limits UV light penetration and synthesis of vitamin D in the skin, and numerous studies have shown that that population is much higher at risk for low vitamin D than a fair-skinned population. In addition, food and supplement intake, sun exposure, body weight, exercise, location of one's principal residence, age, and even certain health conditions can all impact vitamin D requirements. So rather than trying to assign a specific or single recommended vitamin D intake to all adults and children, we basically recommend, or we've developed a vitamin D intake calculator, if you will, called Vitamin Dology, that tailors the individual vitamin D intake recommendation to the specific needs determined by that individual. And it works on this very simple online calculator where you fill out 8 simple questions, and the calculator has the algorithm where it makes the recommendation, and it takes into account, it makes the recommendation for your vitamin D intake and takes into account supplements that you are already taking. It takes into account Shaklee supplements that you may already be taking. And again, it addresses the full range of risk factors that apply uniquely to each individual. So the bottom line is the new range of recommended intakes for healthy adults is approximately 1,000 to 5,000 international units of vitamin D per day, and ranges really from, say, 1,000 international units a day for someone in the summer who's light-skinned, who exercises regularly, who gets daily sun exposure, who might be 20 or 25 years of age, who has a BMI of 22 or is near ideal body weight and lives in Miami or Los Angeles. On the other hand, at the other end of the spectrum, might be a 65-year-old or 70-year-old individual who is in the wintertime with dark skin, who gets only minimal sun exposure, might be overweight, maybe obese, lives in Chicago or Minneapolis or further north than that, and that person may have a recommended intake of up to 5,000 international units of vitamin D. And again, we think that is a great tool to help you determine what your intake recommendation should be based on the latest science, and we're confident and comfortable in the science that we've conducted to help advance the state of vitamin D nutrition and to be able to make what we think are the smartest scientific recommendations to help you determine the amount of vitamin D you need to support optimal health. So with that, I'm going to close the segment on vitamin D, and I'm going to try to close out the call tonight. I've got a little bit of housekeeping that I want to do. I want to thank the health sciences team here, Pam Riggs and Torrance Rogers and Nell Prentice and Dr. Jamie, who's probably flying through the air somewhere right now. I want to thank Sandra Gall for taking some time out to share a little bit with us in how Shaklee sort of fits into what she does and her fitness and nutrition profile. I want to once again mention the product support line that's open from 10 to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, Pacific time, nutrition science product questions at 925-734-3638. I want to mention that this call, up until the Q&A, will be archived and available at 512-404-1255, press number 2, and it'll be available archived until the next call. I want to mention that the monthly conference calls, the health sciences calls, are generally on the second Wednesday of each month. They go from typically 5:30 to 6:30, maybe a little bit longer. I want to mention that if you want more science information, there's a couple of places to go online and get it. One of them is the Health Sciences Facebook fan page. You have to be a member of Facebook, and if you search for Health Sciences, we'll be the first one that comes up under education. The image that you will see is one of tulips. There's not a Shaklee logo. That is a non-branded website, so we cannot discuss product names or specific brands on that particular site, because it is it needs to avoid that in order to be a free exchange of scientific information, which touches on diseases, therapeutic uses of certain nutrients, et cetera. And please support that effort. The other site I want to mention is the MD resource website, where there are links to abstracts and full-text manuscripts of many, many of the scientific research publications that is in large part the Shackley difference and what makes us different from some of the other companies in this space. Last but not least, the upcoming meetings where you're going to have some health sciences participation. You've got Pam Riggs here in Pleasanton on October 19th. Pam again in San Diego on October 22nd for a Dream Tour event. Alexia Smith will be in Denver on the 22nd for the Dream Tour event. And I will be in D.C. also on Friday the 22nd for a Dream Tour event. So thank you all for hanging in on the call, and now we're going to open up for question and answer.